Welcome to DevMode.fm, a podcast dedicated to the tools, techniques, and technologies used in modern web development. I'm Andrew Welch from NY Studio 107.
I'm Earl Johnston from Hypatia Industries.
I'm Marian Nulevent, freelancing from Portland, Oregon.
And today we have on as a guest Adam Watham, and is currently in an undisclosed location somewhere outside of Toronto, Canada. Adam, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And we're having Adam on to discuss Tailwind CSS, which is something that I have been using over the past month or so. I built the devmode.fm website using Tailwind, and it's a really neat framework. It's a utility-first framework, and I'm going to let someone who is a lot smarter than I am on this explain what utility-first CSS is.
Sure. So the general idea is that instead of having classes for sort of higher level abstractions in your UI, like list groups and cards and stuff like that, Tailwind just provides really low level utility classes for doing things like changing the color of text or setting a background color or setting border radius or adding a box shadow or aligning text in a certain direction or enabling flexbox, all sorts of different things like that. And rather than sort of designing things in your style sheets where you're sort of combining different properties and applying them to higher level classes and then either using those classes in your markup or maybe you're targeting existing sort of hooks that you're exposing through your markup, you take all these little small single purpose classes and you just combine them in your HTML to sort of achieve the design that you're looking for. So it's sort of trying to sort of flip the way that you would normally work, where instead of deciding how things look in the CSS, you're sort of doing it in the HTML, which can invoke a bit of a visceral reaction in a lot of people if it's the first time you've ever seen.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, my first, I had a visceral reaction too. And my first introduction, I'd heard of atomic CSS and all that kind of stuff, but my first actual exposure to this was we had Simon Swiss, who was redoing a website that we were working on together with Tachyons. And when I first saw it, I said, what are you doing? This is horrible. Like, why? It looked like he was taking sort of a shorthand court-style notation of inline CSS and moving it from the style property to the class property.
Yeah.
And totally. I was like, what are you doing? Why? I mean, I'm sure you've heard this before, right?
Definitely. That's kind of like the biggest, most common reaction, right? Is what makes this different than inline styles. Like if I'm adding a class that says text red and background green, what's different versus just having a style tag that says color red, background color green? Like what benefit are you getting? And don't we all globally sort of agree that styling things with inline styles is like an anti-pattern or something, you know?
Right.
So,
well, and that's the interesting thing though. So I majored in photojournalism, and one of the things that our professor told us is like, yeah, I'll teach you all the rules and what you should do. But if you break the rules and you do it right, you're probably onto something special. And I think that a lot of the utility CSS or utility first CSS is really onto something. And it does have that initial reaction, kind of almost a revulsion in my case, where you're like, what? But then once I saw what you were actually doing with it, I was really impressed. And, you know, confession time here, CSS is my least favorite thing in the stack of things that I do. It may be because, you know, I'll be handed a really pretty design from a designer or my wife. She's a computer graphic designer. And then I'll proceed to spend the next several days banging my head into the monitor, trying to get it to match perfectly, you know, the style that she's given me. But out of all of the things that I work on, CSS is my least favorite. And your Tailwind CSS, I'm going to say framework, but I wouldn't even really call it a framework in the traditional sense, is the first thing that I've used that I didn't hate. I mean, which for me is it's honestly like a big thing. For me to say that about a CSS something, that's actually a big thing.
Cool.
But why don't you tell us why this isn't bad? Why is it not bad to have this kind of stenographer shorthand notation like W-4 or W-full and put those into our CSS classes?
Yeah, so I think to really sort of understand it, you have to like think a few steps back. There's like a really really sort of famous CSS article that got written several years ago by Nicholas Gallagher, who was an engineer at Twitter for the longest time, and I don't think he's there now. But it was called About HTML Semantics and Front-End Architecture or something like that. Really, really good post. But the general sort of thesis of the post was that it's been a mistake historically to name your classes after your content because it makes the classes harder to reuse, right? So instead of having like a class called like author bio, he recommends coming up with class names that sort of represent the functional UI thing that you're trying to create so that it's more reusable, in the sense that instead of having like an author bio, you might just have a card. And now that card can be used for an author bio. It could be used for a blog post preview. You know, it can be reused in multiple right. ways. So instead of writing the same CSS or trying to achieve the same look with different classes because you're so focused on naming things after your content, he suggests that the most reusable classes are classes that are named, you know, more presentationally, right? But what he is sort of recommending in that post are not classes that invoke that same sort of, oh my God, this is horrible reaction that you get from seeing something like text red.
Right.
You know, he's suggesting something like, you know, UI list for a list that has no styles.
So try and make it more generic.
Yeah, more generic and less tied to the content. And when I read that, that was sort of like a light bulb moment for me. It was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it sort of turns things around a little bit. So instead of writing HTML and choosing a name for a class based on the content, and then sort of using your CSS to hook into the class that you chose when you were writing the HTML, but you're doing it the opposite way around. You have HTML, and then you're applying a class that you already have that represents some UI component, and applying that in your markup to say, I want this section to look like this component that I've already designed
right.
over in my CSS. So once I sort of made that mental switch where I'm naming my classes in my CSS instead of naming my classes in my HTML, if that makes sense. Like, I'm naming it based on the visual style that I want this component to have. It just sort of slowly led me down this path of introducing more and more of these low-level abstractions, because you find yourself in situations where you have two versions of something that look exactly the same, except in one of them, the text is right aligned, and in one of them, the text is left aligned.
Right.
If you're taking like a BM approach or something, you might think, okay, well, maybe this is a modifier. Maybe I have like, you know, a list left and a list right or something, so that you're not just adding a utility class. But once you get to that point where you're creating modifiers for things like that, sometimes it feels like just a little bit unnecessary. Like, what if you have another component that also has the same types of modifiers, and all you're doing to accomplish that is setting the same property to the same value that you did in the modifier for the other component? Wouldn't it be like more composable to just have utility classes that do those things for you that you can combine with your existing components? So instead of creating a new modifier every time you want a right aligned version of something, you just have one class that can right align anything.
Yeah, and you know, one of the interesting things about this is that I think that the thing about Tailwind that I really enjoy is that it has created a effective workflow for me to create CSS. Whereas before, like, if, you know, if I'm styling something, let's say I'm styling a blog, I might write a CSS class that's, you know, or it might be like blog headline H4, you know, and I would apply a bunch of stuff to it, right? And now what I end up doing is in the HTML, you know, I'll just do class equals, and then I'll put the various properties, you know, font mono, text size, you know, whatever, and I'll do it all there. But then what I will do is I will see the common classes that I'm using on a number of different things, and then I will factor them back out in the CSS using @apply. To then create a, I guess you'd call it a, I mean, I'm calling it a semantically named class, but whatever name, yeah, what name
I
makes the most sense?
Component class. Right.
Component is, component makes you sound much smarter. So everyone wants to build everything in components these days. So we'll call it a component. But it creates a workflow where I can sit down. I don't even have to open up my CSS style sheet. And I can just start prototyping something. I can mock it up. I've got live reload going on in the browser. And I can just type in classes until everything looks right. And then I can refactor out the commonality into a component, using the yep. smart term, in the CSS. And then I can start reusing it. And it's really smart because it lets you prototype something really quickly. And then it lets you see the commonalities and do the refactoring to pull that out into a component class. And I think that the fact that you can hit the ground running prototyping is really huge, but also the fact that it kind of gives you an implicit workflow where you then refactor those out into components. And I really, yeah. really enjoy that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the thing that really makes it stand out from some of the other utility-focused frameworks, mm-hmm. as we have, it's not just like a library of classes, right? It's
right.
a library of classes along with sort of a recommended workflow that I think works really well. And that's what we mean when we say like a utility-first CSS mm-hmm. framework. So the idea is you have some piece of UI that you need to implement. You try and build it just by combining all the utility classes that you need. And if you only ever need to do it once, then you just kind of leave it and you're done. But if you need to build something else later and then something else later, and you start to notice, well, you know, all of these things, I'm applying the same border radius, the same padding, and the right. same shadow. Well, maybe what I have here is like a card component or something. And you ask yourself this question, like, if I change the border radius on this element, would I also want to change it on these other two? Like, is there like an implicit link between these?
Right.
Well, then I should create an abstraction around this, right? And that's when you would extract like a new class called, you know, dot card or something like that. And Tailwind comes with tools to make it really easy to do that. So
yes,
instead of just
thank you for add apply. Thank you.
Yeah. So like traditionally, if you wanted to do that, you would create a new class and then you would figure out, well, what are the styles that all these classes are applying? And now I'm going to just retype those ones in or whatever. But using add apply, you literally can just copy the list of classes out of your HTML, paste it into your CSS.
Right.
And then replace that list of classes in your HTML with the new sort of super class that kind of encapsulates all those.
Yeah. And this actually reminds me, if anyone has done any object-oriented programming, it really is kind of the same thing that you're doing when you're defining base classes or inheritance and figuring out, you know, what method should go where. And it just feels really natural to me as a way that you can refactor everything out, you know?
Yeah, I think that's true just as like a general sort of way of looking at it, right? Like, I think what we have done historically with CSS is too much premature abstraction. Like, yep. with CSS, traditionally what you've done is you've tried to like avoid duplication instead of removing duplication. You know what I mean? So you're always preemptively trying to name something in advance before it's really earned the right to have its own name.
Mm-hmm.
So what the workflow that we try and encourage with Tailwind is more like what you would do when you're writing, you know, real code, backend
right.
code, or writing JavaScript or something. You just kind of solve the problem and then you look for opportunities to, well, you know, I've got this duplicated code in these two places. Maybe I can extract a function there.
You refactor it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's exactly the mental model that we're trying to encourage with your CSS with Tailwind.
So. Yeah. And the whole idea of utility first CSS, within a very short period of time, I have gone from thinking it's an absolutely awful idea to thinking that it's completely brilliant in a very short period of time. and I'm, you know, just to give people who are not familiar with it an example. So I'm kind of looking at some CSS that I have here. And you can do stuff, you know, you can define your CSS the way you normally would, like dot, tag, link, you know, bracket, margin right, whatever, margin left, whatever. But you can also use at apply. And what that lets you do is put the class names in there instead of properties. So you're effectively saying, When you use add apply, you're effectively saying, I want to inherit all of the properties from this CSS class. And it's a really, it's just brilliant. The workflow that this kind of pushes you to do is just absolutely fantastic.
And what I think is kind of interesting is like, I sort of stumbled upon that workflow by using this Less preprocessor,
right.
You know? So Less has sort of fallen out of favor, and people use SAS a lot more now. And even in like the really elite circles, people aren't even using SAS anymore, doing CSS and JS and all this other, you know, fancy modern stuff. But with Less, they had this feature that none of the other preprocessors had,
right.
Which is that you could use an existing class as a mix-in.
Yes, and we did a podcast on tachyons a month or two ago on, I think it was on CraftX or something like that. And I was talking about it to Simon, and I said, yeah, I mean, this is nice, but what I really want is class inheritance in CSS. Like, that's what I want. And then a couple of months later,
there it is.
I'm looking at Tailwind, and I'm like, holy crap, Adam gave me exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, I didn't invent it, right? I stole this concept.
You invented it. No. As far as I'm concerned, you invented it.
And you could do it in SAS and stuff, too, if people would use, like, add extend, right?
Right.
Which it has a lot of downsides, so it's sort of, you know, considered not a good way to reuse styles or anymore because it affects the order that things get declared in, and it does a bunch of funky stuff, but... In terms of just like, okay, I have a class that sets my margin to this value from a predefined scale of margins, and I want to sort of bake that into another class, well, you can use add apply to just say, apply this margin class to this component class, and now they're sort of like permanently linked. Because, you know, like you had sort of alluded to, one of the biggest sort of turnoffs for people who are trying to take this sort of approach, this utility focused approach to CSS and to your markup is when you see that you're to create a button, you need to add a class to define the background color, a class to define the font weight, a class to define the padding, a class to define the font color, you know, a class to define how it should look on hover.
Yeah, like, it looks like someone vomited in your HTML, right? If you have
you
that many classes.
You easily end up with like 9 or 12 classes in this single element.
Right.
Which, although it like looks ugly, it's hard to come up with like a purely objective reason for why it's inherently bad until you start seeing those same 9 classes repeated on 50 buttons in your site.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden it's like, well, if I need to change one of these buttons... and I want to change all the other ones at the same time, it's going to be this gross find and replace thing. It just doesn't feel like the right workflow to do that.
Right. And that's what Adam and that's what Simon ended up doing when he rebuilt that site with tachyons, is he actually created a bunch of helper variables in Twig. So he then, you know, in Twig, he would say like, you know, set, you know, blog title equals, and then give it this whole long list of classes so that if he did want to change that kind of component class, he could do it there. Totally. And, you know, I said to him, I mean, yeah, you can do it. It just feels weird. And it's like we're still doing the same thing, right? But we're changing where we're doing it. Like in the past, if we wanted to do this in CSS, we would just define a semantic class and put all the classes in there. And say, okay, we're not going to do that there. We're going to use utility CSS, and then we're going to create this, you know, combined component in Twig, is how he ended up doing it.
And
but the fact that you're
saying it accomplishes the same thing and totally is a works, right?
It's just we're changing where we're doing it.
Yeah. And I think it's a more of a leap for people to jump to doing it that way. Like it's already hard to show someone like a utility focused CSS approach and get them to be even willing to try it because a lot of the time it's just so different to what you're used to and seems to go against everything you've been taught is the right way to do things. So to combine that with saying, well, oh, you also have to solve these problems using this new templating thing. Like a lot of the time that's just enough to make someone say, okay, I'm just going to keep doing things the way that I was doing it. I don't want to have to change everything about the way I've worked forever. And a lot of these other utility frameworks do promote sort of, using your templating language as the means of avoiding duplication, right? If you have a button, with 9 classes on it, you should create like a partial or something for your button and then use that everywhere. That's sort of the, yeah, you know, how they would recommend doing it, which can work.
It felt kind of gross to me to do it that way.
And it's also just like a lot to enforce on someone, right?
If right.
you're building like a WordPress template or something and you don't even have like a templating language, now you're saying to someone, well, if you want to approach your CSS this way, you also have to adopt a templating language. Otherwise, right. you're going to have all these problems. It's just like, that's like the straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of getting someone to be willing to even try it. So with Tailwind, I think like we've done a good job of creating a more comfortable path to trying this stuff while still feeling like you can keep one foot in the pool that you're already comfortable with.
Right. You know, and that's, I mean, just it. You hit the sweet spot. And the thing I'll say about conventional wisdom, and I realize that, you know, some of the things that are in utility first CSS go against the conventional wisdom that's kind of been in the web dev market for some time. But it was less than 100 years ago that conventional wisdom in the United States was that women shouldn't vote.
Sure.
Right. And that was obviously yeah. wrong and stupid. Right. So we need to be able to look at the things that we think are, you know, just knowledge that is a given and it should always be this way, and reevaluate it. And I'll tell you what, Tailwind is has definitely done that for me, because, again, my favorite thing about it is that I can sit down with an empty project and I can just start prototyping and I can just yeah. hammer it out using the utility classes, and I can have something up and running, presentable, could show it to a client very, very quickly because of the base of style sheets that are in there. But I'm curious. I know that this is the first time that Earl mm-hmm. has been exposed to Tailwind at all.
Yeah.
I'm wondering cool. if Earl has any kind of thoughts on what we're talking about, or do you think you're in the room with crazy people?
No. Well, that's the thing is that, so I came into this completely dark. I talked to Andrew a couple of days ago about, you know, potentially doing some, you know, I haven't had a chance to dive into it yet and look around. Andrew's like, that might be a good thing, man. Just come into it and check it out. And so the first thing that jumps out at me, which I think is great and is really interesting, is it goes back to what Andrew was talking about as far as like taking a PSD and trying to hammer it into something in CSS, right? So yep. the way that I've always gone about it is I end up making those component-based classes where I say, okay, I'm looking at a single page design. I'm going to need these components, and I start designing the components, and I start hammering away and, you know, and this and that. But from a utility-first standpoint, it completely changes the way that I end up looking at that PSD, right? Instead yep. of saying, what components do I need, I start really getting granular with it and say, okay, I'm going to need, you know, right-align text here, box shadows here, and this and that. And so you start building these, like, you know, these utility classes, and then, it changes the workflow, which you guys already touched on, changes the workflow completely to say, okay, you know, let the components come out of the utility
right.
instead of, which is, it just never occurred to me. And the add apply thing is just blowing my mind, dude.
Well, and that's the point that Adam made earlier, which is that we do kind of premature refactoring of these things into classes. Because right. how many times has it happened that you tried to define these abstract classes and you're building stuff and then you get like 80% of the way in and you're like, oh crap.
Yeah.
Like this doesn't
yeah,
actually
like one implementation yes. of it that has this slight difference.
Yeah, this doesn't fit in and now my whole hierarchy just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And I can either
you
gut
end up
it
doing things where you have like a modifier that like undoes some style right. from well, the component.
Yeah.
And that always
right.
feels backwards, right? When you're trying
weird,
to add
yeah.
classes to undo styles.
Right. And you have two choices there, really. You can go back and you can refactor everything, right? Or you can monkey patch it. And yeah. when the client is like, you know, I want to look at it tomorrow, you're more inclined to monkey patch it.
Well, you know what
and
the right
your CSS
is,
just gets
can.
More and more yeah. fragile over time in that sense too, right? Because CSS is one of the scariest things to change on a project because
yes.
it's so hard to know for sure what the consequences are going to be.
Yeah.
And
unless
that's,
you've,
yeah.
you know.
It's right in the name. It cascades.
Yes.
You're going to cascade problems.
and that's the fun thing, and that's something that Simon has kind of harped on all the time, is that when you scale CSS up to a certain point, the kind of reusability goes out the window because you're scared to touch it, because mm-hmm. the changes you make could have implications. You know, you could break stuff in various places. And it really, people end up with kind of scary large CSS code bases, and they become monstrosities that you just don't want to touch because you're just like, well, yeah, you know, I really would like to fix this the right way, but it's going to break half of my pages and I'm going to lose days trying to fix it. You know,
I remember being horrified the first time I saw more CSS on a page than HTML. This is clearly wrong.
But I've seen stuff where I have seen, I mean, I cannot unsee it. I've stared into the void and I have seen like these CSS that has been built over years. And it's just stuff piled on top of stuff, piled on top of stuff. Yeah. And it's like going into a hoarder's house. And trying to make sense of it if you're being called in to try and work on it. And it's just a nightmare. And that's one other kind of nice thing that I think Tailwind gives you is that I can approach any of the projects that I'm working on using Tailwind, and I know how to do stuff. Like, I can change stuff and have confidence that these are standard things, and this is the way that they're going to work. And I think that's fantastic.
I think what's happening is CSS is growing up over the last how many years? 10, probably not 20, but it's getting bigger, you know, more CSS gets thrown into things. It's being used to do more stuff.
Yep.
And so it's acquiring or it's needing to acquire things like how do you refactor your CSS? It's not a problem, really, if there's way more HTML than CSS on a page and not that much of either.
Yep.
And so this is like, you know, you say, okay, we're going to use SAS because we really need a preprocessor. And suddenly, you know, you start trying to figure out how to make stuff tractable. You're going to use a CSS framework at all instead of, you know, starting from scratch. Or maybe you always put a little bit of margin on your body class and, you know, you have three lines of standard CSS that you start from.
So I want to kind of switch gears because I mentioned earlier that I don't consider Tailwind to necessarily be a CSS framework and that the workflow is something that I really enjoy about it. The other thing that when I, and Simon is again the first one that pointed Tailwind CSS out to me. When I first looked at it, I said, oh, this looks neat. And then I looked further and I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. I've got to run some custom JavaScript just to generate my CSS. Like, that's how this works. But the more that I looked at that and the way that you did that, I think it's brilliant because basically you don't just get Tailwind as it is, right? There are a number of things that you can customize in your Tailwind.js. So basically your build process is you run the Tailwind.js and it actually generates your Tailwind for you. And you can use it right out of the box. And the defaults are very, very reasonable. But you can also go in and you can add whatever colors you want to use. And then it will generate all of the various classes for text color, background color, you know, based on those. You can define the CSS breakpoints for media queries semantically. So you have the screens property where you can say the small screen is 576 pixels, XL is 1200, and you can have as many or as few as you want. And then it will generate all of the at media query breakpoints for you. And on and on and on. There are a number of settings in here. You can define all your fonts in there, your text sizes, and effectively, I would call Tailwind more of a CSS generator. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, we think of it as sort of, I mean, the whole goal of the framework is to be something that you can use to build completely custom user interfaces, right? We didn't want to build something that had like a look to it.
Right.
Whereas with like Bootstrap, although Bootstrap is super customizable too, I don't think they do enough education in terms of teaching people how to customize it and extend it and stuff. And what you end up with is a lot of sites that just are really identifiably Bootstrap sites.
Yeah, there's even a website out there called Every Bleeping Bootstrap Website Ever. which is hilarious. Like, I don't know if you've seen it, but if you Google every
brute, it like crawls around looking for sites that it detects are bootstrapped.
No. It's just, it's a kind of generic-ish version.
It's like a satire, like a satirical.
It's a satire, but it's accurate.
Oh, it's totally accurate. Yeah,
well, it's totally accurate because it's got a hero image. It's got a big font. It's got a button, and then it's got the four subsections, and And I think that some of the natural evolution of working with CSS is that people start writing it on their own, then they find these frameworks and they're like, yes, I can just use this. It, you know, it does everything for me, right? Then after they've used a framework like Bootstrap for a while, it starts to kind of slowly dawn on you that you're spending more time trying to hammer the framework into doing what you want and ending up with this massive bloat of CSS that you're not using. And then I think kind of the natural evolution is for people to kind of go back to just doing their own custom CSS. But having a utility-first CSS generator like Tailwind that will take care of kind of the baseline stuff for you, I think is a fantastic way to do it.
Yeah, like we've just been so focused on the customization story from the beginning. And like the whole customization thing isn't like a second class sort of citizen, right? Like with Bootstrap, there's so many people who use it from a CDN and like that's it. Or they download it pre-built and that's it. Some people will pull in the SAS version and override variables and stuff, but I don't think that's the majority of users. Whereas with Tailwind, like we provide a CDN version because it's convenient if you're trying to make a CodePen demo or something. But the whole story from the beginning of the documentation is like, this is what you do. You install it with NPM. You generate your config file.
Yep.
And, you know, we just really, really encourage you to take ownership of that sort of thing. So that if you want to have different breakpoints, like you don't have to go and learn how to customize the breakpoints after the fact. It's like we've sort of shown you this from the very beginning.
Yeah. And let me, for people that haven't used Tailwind before, let me give a hopefully a simple example of how this might be useful. So in the tailwind.js, you can define your screens, which are in Tailwind parlance. Those are your at media query breakpoints. And you can define them with names. So like, for instance, I mentioned it before, small will be 576 pixels, right? Then in your actual CSS, you can just put at screen colon SM for small, and dump whatever CSS you want in there, and it will generate that with the proper at media query breakpoint. But the nice thing about that is if you decide to go back and change it, if you're like, well, you know, actually, I don't want my small size to be 576, I want it to be 700. You can just change it in the Tailwind config, and it regenerates everything, and it all just works. And it's the same with your fonts. It's the same with your colors. And I just think that was a super clever way to do it, Adam. Nice job.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, the idea of that config file is almost to just be like a JavaScript representation of your like design system or style guide for your project, right? You pick sort of what your type scale is, what your spacing scale is, what your color palette is, and you can name anything, whatever you want. So if one person wants to name their colors primary, secondary, tertiary, another person wants to name their colors red, blue, and green, that's totally up to you, and you can kind of do whatever you want there. Yeah. That's kind of the whole story, right?
Yeah, and that's a really good point, is that this tailwind.js file then gives you kind of an overview from a very broad perspective of what your design system for the site is. You know, you don't have to go combing through hundreds of pages of CSS to look at what your type scale is, for instance, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't have to do a search and replace. if God forbid you want to change your type scale, you know, you don't have to do some crazy regex to change everything. You just change it in the config file and regenerate it.
Yeah, for sure. It's something we're planning to do. I haven't actually started on yet, but it's in the cards, is being able to take these config files and generate like documentation for your project.
Oh, nice.
That is similar to like the documentation that we have for the actual framework, but with all your values inserted, with the examples updated to show stuff based on your values and stuff.
Yeah, that's a neat idea. Or even a simplified style guide for clients too, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm thinking that what's going to come along after Tailwind is going to be something called CSS Storm or something, you know? Because CSS getting complex and managing all that complexity is what we're all struggling to do one way or another.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the one thing I can tell you about that is I was hesitant to give Tailwind a shot, but I am finding I am having to spend less time struggling with CSS, and it just kind of works in terms of generating stuff. And I even do some funky stuff, Adam, like I use Font Face Observer, right, so that I can render a WebSafe font, and then after the font event has happened and it's loaded, I can swap in the actual font. And I was looking through Tailwind, and I'm like, oh, God, I hope it's not going to fight me on this. But no, it was super easy to create that pattern in my CSS and have it just work. And awesome. I just love tools that don't impose their idea of how things should work on me. You know?
Yeah, we try really hard to make sure that it's not going to like get in your way, or that you're going to have to fight with it in any way. And that's a lot easier being a utility framework than trying to provide higher level components like Bulma or Foundation or Bootstrap
right.
does, where you sort of have no choice but to bake in some opinions about how things should look or how things should work. But yeah, so far it's worked out pretty well. Again, like the whole goal was like, I want to have something that gives me a sane starting point for different projects, even mm-hmm. when those projects look completely different, because I was sick of starting from a completely blank canvas every single time.
It's awful.
I just felt like there must be something that's reusable here. You know yeah. what I mean? And sort of stumbling on the workflow was what made that.
I got it.
Realize what I could.
I got share. It. This is a perfect analog. So I have been administering Unix boxes for longer than I care to tell anyone. So I know what I'm doing around the shell, but I don't want to start provisioning in a new server from just the base Ubuntu 16.04. Like, it's just horrible. I know how to do it, but it's awful. So I use Forge to provision it. Some people use Server Pilot. Really, that's analogous to what Tailwind is doing. It's almost a CSS provisioner in a way. You know, it's provisioning my CSS style sheets with a really nice base framework that I can work from, the same way Forge provisions my server.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Now, some other really kind of interesting stuff about Tailwind is that if you start adding tons of stuff to it, in terms of a whole lot of different screens or a whole lot of different sizes, the CSS can get kind of big in terms of just the generated CSS. Like, I think the base install, I think, is like 245K, something like that. If you change nothing and you just build it.
Yeah.
I think that's how big it is.
I think it gzips down to like 31 kilobytes or something, which is still bigger than like
right.
Bootstrap and stuff. But yeah, it's not a micro framework or anything by any means.
But that's the interesting thing, though, is because of all the repeating patterns that are in mm-hmm. that text, it compresses ridiculously well.
Yeah, with a lot gzip. Better than like regular custom CSS ever right. would.
And the other thing that I've been using along with Tailwind is I've been using Purge CSS. That initially someone pointed it out to me, and I had used, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, I'd used a tool like that, and it had ended up being a real pain in the ass, so I was hesitant to use it.
Yeah.
But it actually works really easily, and what it does is it rips through all of your HTML, all of your JavaScript, and it finds all of the classes that you use, and it strips out everything else.
Yeah.
And it took my the CSS for devmode.fm was, 245K, minimized but not gzipped.
Yep.
It took it down to 8K.
Wow. Like 8, uncompressed
8K
kilobytes.
Uncompressed. That's yeah. all the CSS that was on the site.
Totally.
And I just thought that was pretty wild.
Yeah, Purge CSS, Purge CSS is a tool based on Purify mm-hmm. CSS, which I don't think is super maintained
right.
anymore.
Right.
But those, they're sort of like a match made in heaven, right? Because
right.
Tailwind just fundamentally is always going to provide more CSS than you're ever going to use. Because the idea is that the classes you need are already there and you never have to go and write them. So there's always going to be tons of classes that you never use, especially because we generate like responsive variations of every single class.
Yep.
So if you want something to be red on small screens and green on large screens, we have prefixes and stuff that you can add to your classes to make that really easy to do. But you could see how that sort of has like this combinatoric explosion effect when anytime you add a new screen, it's going to just multiply
right.
by the number of colors, by the number of screens. It's so things can get pretty crazy. But yeah, Purge CSS works really awesome with Tailwind in that sense, because it just rips out everything that you're not using. And it's one of those tools that is kind of scary to use, because if you sit there and think to yourself about it as a developer, you can come up with lots of ways that it could break. You right. know what I mean? Like, well, what if my classes are stored in a database because I have some user created HTML? How is it going to remove those? And
right.
of course it can't. Or what if I'm dynamically generating a class name by concatenating two strings? Well, it's not going to be able to detect that either.
Right.
So you sort of have to like understand how it works so that you, because it affects how you author your templates
right.
a little bit. But all it's really doing is literally going through every file that you provide it, which is HTML, JavaScript, anything you want.
Even SVGs, like anything.
Anything.
Yeah.
It's literally just taking the contents of that file as a string, splitting it on spaces, so you have an array of every space delimited string in that file, and then comparing those strings against your CSS.
Right.
So it's not even intelligent enough to like look for class attributes and extract classes.
Right.
Which sounds maybe like it's a bad thing, but to me that actually makes me more confident because
right.
of how brain dead, dumb, and simple it actually is.
Yeah.
It makes it easy to sort of understand what I need to do when I'm authoring my templates to make sure that I'm doing it in like a purge CSS.
You know, I agree. Clever ideas in programming are usually the worst.
Yeah.
Because
so yeah, it works really well. I mean, there's you can have like false positives in the sense that it might leave CSS that you're not actually using. Like if you are never using the container class in your HTML, but you're building a site about shipping containers and
right.
the word container appears in an H1 tag, well, it's going to keep the container class.
Right.
But that's like more of a blessing in my opinion, because I'd rather have a couple classes left alone that I'm not actually using than have it accidentally remove classes that I actually needed. You know
right,
what
sure,
I mean?
Yeah.
And you can also provide a whitelist of classes to it if you really need to, that says, always keep these classes in there, even if you didn't think they were being used.
Yeah. And another thing you can do is you can just create a dummy, you know, HTML or twig file
yeah.
and just yeah, dump totally. Any classes in yeah. there that are dynamically created.
I think that's a great way to do it. You basically just create like a kitchen sink file yeah. or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But those are the exceptions. Like the only times that I've run into where I've had to do that is for whatever reason, it wasn't pulling out the classes from Vue.js's vbind class, for instance.
Okay.
It wasn't finding those.
Okay.
I don't know why. No big deal. Initially, I added them to the whitelist, and then I just created a kitchen sink file for it to parse through. There are literally three or four of them in there right now. Yeah. It's not many.
Perfect.
But I don't want to get too mired down into purge CSS. I just wanted to mention it because I thought it was really cool. Something that kind of works well with Tailwind.
Yeah.
And one of the other nice things about the way that Tailwind works is I use critical CSS on all of my sites where I inline, you know, all the critical CSS to make it load nice and quick and all that. And because the class names are so terse and semantic, or non-semantic, sorry, but terse, kind of, you know, stenographer style, it actually makes the critical CSS smaller too. That ends mm-hmm. up getting inlined. And then if you combined Tailwind's terse classes with purge CSS that removes everything you don't use, the critical CSS just ends up being super small and generated much quicker because it's got less to parse, less
sure.
to parse through. And it's just really neat.
Yeah. I saw a guy made he redid his personal site with Tailwind, and he was able to come with purge CSS and inlining CSS into his like actual site. Mm-hmm. He delivers like the entire personal site in like 1 9-kilobyte download with all the CSS inlined into the head of the document because mm-hmm. it was just so small that it was not worth doing like a separate request or anything for
right.
it. And so Yeah, it's pretty interesting because like it looks like such a big framework, but if you sort of do it right, it's actually like incredibly small tool. So it's a different way of working for sure, and you have to kind of adjust a few things to really maximize like your decrease in file size. You have to tweak the way you work a little bit, but I think it's pretty, you know, insignificant long term for the gains that you're going to get in that change in file size. So.
Well, maybe I'm still on the honeymoon, but I, you know, in using Tailwind, I feel like playing Bob Marley's Emancipation Song, right? Because I feel like I've been freed from mental slavery, right?
Totally.
Because really, it just, and thank God, I mean, I know it wasn't just you, because there are lots of people that have worked on this kind of concept of atomic CSS and utility CSS for quite some time. But thank God some people were thinking about different ways to attack this problem with CSS. And it actually has enlightened me to problems in CSS that I didn't even know I had. Like, so one of the things that I'm doing right now is I'm redoing nystudio107.com. I'm moving that from Craft CMS 2 to Craft CMS 3. And at the same time, I'm refactoring all the CSS in Tailwind. And I'm redoing, because I'm an idiot, I decided to do both at the same time, right?
Yep.
And in going through my CSS, I just realized how garbage it was. Like, I like a lot of the CSS that I had written for that site, like, clearly I had just kind of, like, dumped it in there to get it working. And in refactoring it with Tailwind, it's really made me kind of look at it, and some of it, it kind of made me cringe. I was glad no one else was looking at it.
Well, I mean, I feel like, to be fair, I feel like that going back to anything I wrote more than 6 months ago, you know, regardless of language or what I was doing, I'm just like, man, you dummy. What were you doing?
But I think if you're not doing that, like if you look at something you did a year or two ago and you don't shake your head and, you know, think you're an idiot, you probably aren't learning enough.
Yeah.
For sure.
You know? Yeah. So I think, it's probably perfectly normal, but I'm just saying that the change in mindset has made me look at the way that I was doing the CSS there a whole lot differently. And the current thing that I'm dealing with is that I'm getting from a rich text field, I'm getting a bunch of, you know, rich HTML stuff and finding a way to use Tailwind to style that, right? Because it has to be styled off of a wrapper. So you have to have a wrapper class and then... But, you know, using at apply, I can just do it the way I do everything else.
I think that's honestly like an important point to understand with Tailwind in general is it's not trying to give you like some silver bullet solution where you never have to write CSS.
Right.
It's trying to like make a bunch of things easier. But we also just try really hard to document like how to write new CSS the way that the creators of the framework would. Because for me, the biggest... you know, paralyzing thing I always hit with new tools is whenever I need to extend it or customize it in some way, I'm always thinking like, oh, am I going to do this like in a dumb way? Like how would someone who's really, really experienced with this do what I want to do? And sometimes it's hard to find that information. So we try to do a good job of explaining clearly like, okay, well, if you need to create a new utility class, this is where you should put it in your file. Here's how you can reference values from the config file if you need to. Here's how you can make that generate responsive versions if you need them, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and the Tailwind documentation is amazing. I think the two things that you did so well is, A, the workflow that we've talked about before, because Tailwind is not just a framework. It is a whole workflow for doing this stuff, whether it's... the part of the workflow where it generates the CSS for you, or the part of the workflow where you refactor the CSS out into component classes, that I think you've nailed. And then the documentation is awesome because I can just go in there, type something to search for, and it's got a nice little autocomplete, click, go right to it, examples. I think that makes a huge difference in terms of people's willingness to adopt it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, for instance... on my previous stack that I had been using was I used something called Flexbox Grid, right? Yeah. I used normalized CSS, Flexbox Grid, and I think that was it for my base CSS. Now that I'm refactoring it with Tailwind, because the documentation is so awesome, I'm not using, I'm just using the Flex classes that you have built into Tailwind, and it's just it's great.
Yeah, it's surprising how much you can do without having to step up to that extra level of abstraction a lot of the time.
You know, I mean, for what I was doing, you know, I don't need it at all. The flex classes combined with the examples that you had there make it super easy to do the layout. And actually, I've been cleaning up the HTML and the CSS in the process, you know?
Yeah, awesome.
The only part that has annoyed me, and it's not even really an annoyance, was, you know, first I was going to go in and I was going to redo all of the HTML with kind of the utility classes in there, right? Yep. But then I realized that I have kind of a hybrid thing going on my site. So I've got a blog index page, right, that it lists some thumbnails of all the blogs. Then I also have a separate template that is what Vue.js uses to async load. Uh-oh. All right, hold on a second, guys.
Red dog, dog attack.
I think my wife just came home. The dogs. Hopefully it won't get too loud. But then I have a separate template that Vue.js uses to async load additional blog entries, right? So that's effectively duplicating that content. And, you know, that's kind of a separate problem from the point of view of I really would like to unify it so that Vue is rendering everything, but then I have to get into server-side pre-rendering to help with the page speed, and it's just not a path that I'm going down right now. But then I also have a third template that is basically the same thing, but it is for the AMP, the Google AMP version of the pages, right? Because Google has some very specific tags. You can't just use an image tag. So effectively, in three places, I've got the very similar markup doing kind of the same thing, and I have to go back in and refactor it. And what I ended up doing was I was already using semantic classes. I ended up just refactoring those out. They're not semantic classes anymore. They are now components. I didn't change anything, but I'm calling them that, right? And I just used Tailwind's add apply to refactor everything out into that. And that may seem like kind of a pointless exercise, but the fact that I'm using the same class names in my CSS file that I'm using in the actual templates is kind of a big deal, you know?
For sure.
I could, yeah.
But it removes some of the magic numbers and stuff from your
right
files too. Not that you couldn't have figured out a way to do that before with variables and stuff like that, but it just sort of like really helps you enforce some of this consistency. If you can sort of work as hard as possible to only ever be referencing like existing utility classes when you're creating these component classes, it just buys you a lot of consistency for free in your designs.
So the way I'm approaching it is I'm getting the regular templates done first, and then I'm then moving those over and redoing the AMP versions of them. And same thing with the async loaded Vue stuff. And it's worked pretty well, but it's been kind of annoying to do. But I think that, I don't think that's necessarily a Tailwind problem. That's just if you're refactoring anything and you've got multiple instances of it, it's going to be annoying to do it. It's just kind of the way it is.
That's what the refactoring is for, is to reduce some of those multiple instances.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes refactoring makes me want to take Xanax before I do it because it can be pretty brutal.
Well, it's adorable that it's only sometimes. That's good for you.
So, Marion, I don't know, what is your kind of experience with utility CSS? Are you coming into this cold as well, or?
I guess my experience is that I sort of always end up trying to write my own utility CSS so that I don't start with a blank slate, but I start with these are the things that were useful to me. You know, here's how I automated the, you know, I have my little file where I say here, I define the colors and I define the fonts and I define the breakpoints, and I, you know, I'm a SaaS person, and there they are.
So are we good salesmen? Have we convinced you to at least take a look at this Tailwind thing?
You've convinced me to take a look at it. You've convinced me that it's been a long time since you could reasonably expect all of your CSS to fit on one screen,
right?
So that you could, you know, reasonably edit it. And so we need better tooling, and whether that's going to be
right
CSS Storm, you know, some the big guys come in with some all in or Visual CSS or whatever, all singing, all dancing thing that will help you manage that complexity. Whether, you know, it's going to be changes in the culture so that we decide we no longer want our buttons to have, you know, all kinds of features, but just a plain blue blob is fine as long as the corners are rounded and that no longer has to look like it's a, you know, it's got highlights from a particular angle and looks different when it's pushed.
Right.
That certainly has helped.
Well, I think that's just a visual thing. At least in my opinion, the concepts that are in Tailwind are bigger than Tailwind from the point of view of they are broad concepts that is being used in all levels of computer science.
That's what I'm picking up from the broad concepts is that it's about making refactoring easier.
Right.
And which is like key to managing that complexity. Because if you just take all of that complexity and you say, well, we're shoving it into all of these utility classes and we're dumping it in our HTML.
Right.
You haven't, you know, you just sort of pushed the problem around or even made it worse. But that complexity needs to be encapsulated. And if you are coming up with better tools for managing and encapsulating and dealing with that complexity so that you don't get these CSS files that look like somebody has had a candle dripping there for the last 20 years.
That's really apt.
The candle dripping is a perfect analogy in terms of the way a lot of this CSS stuff builds up. Marion, that is gold.
That's going to become an actual term, I'm pretty sure.
That's
all right.
Candle drip CSS. I love it.
Your CSS all over the place.
Yeah, candle drip code in general. Yeah. You know, you certainly get it everywhere. Yeah,
but the broader concepts of a workflow, and I'm huge on workflows in terms of, I think adopting a good workflow just makes you more productive and it helps you like mentally because you know that certain things are just taken care of and they're done right and they're done in a standard way so that when I approach a new project, you know, boom, I can just start up and running with a really good base of stuff. And I think that concept that Tailwind embraces is universal from the point of view of, you know, we've got a generator to build this stuff. Here's your base. And then you can then refactor these things. And I just think that whether, you know, Tailwind is the thing that we're using in 10 years, I think the concepts from Tailwind for sure we're going to be using in one way or another because they're universal concepts.
I can believe that we will be using the concepts in 10 years. I doubt very much that unless it's changed out of all recognition that Tailwind itself will be the thing we're using in 10 years.
It'll be Tailwind 10. Okay.
It'll be Tailwind 10, but it's going to be, you know, your IDE. Like,
right.
Nobody uses Notepad to write their PHP code.
They do. No, I've seen people doing it.
Okay. And it used to be maybe reasonable, but it's not a serious contender for here's the best way to write PHP.
Right.
And it's not going to be a serious contender for here's the best way to write CSS either.
Right.
All of these things kind of start small and simple, and then they get big, and you need much more tooling to manage them.
Well, I think the important thing for me is that here and now, today, Tailwind lets me build sites quicker in terms of prototyping them quicker. And what I end up with as a result is not a drip candle CSS. Right? Like I'm actually building something manageable and I don't feel that I don't want to touch it because it's going to break something. So, I mean, I think it's just a really, really great way to work. And I hope that, you know, some people may have visceral reactions to the whole idea of utility CSS. To you listening, who just love BEM, like you have a BEM teddy bear that you cuddle up at night with and you caress it as you go to bed, give utility first CSS a shot, because I was my initial reaction was also revulsion. But I have found that it makes me much less hesitant about doing the CSS. I mean, I really, really enjoy it. So if you're skeptical, try it. I mean, that's really what I have to say.
Sounds like utility first, but also don't forget the refactoring second.
Well, and that's something, Adam, that I think you did awesome, is that, and you know, nothing against tachyons. It kind of blazed a trail to some extent, but it was very uncompromising. And yes, there were ways to do some of this refactoring, but it was a lot more work. The workflow that you've built in with add apply and the JavaScript generator is just so easy to use that it makes me want to do it, you know? And I think that's a critical part of embracing something like this. And I think that's why there may be more resistance to something like Tailwind, because it doesn't strike that comfortable middle ground, and it doesn't give you as much preset workflow. Do you have any thoughts on that, Adam?
No, I think that's kind of exactly the problem that we sort of set out to solve, right? There was definitely other tools out there that encouraged the same sort of approach to implementing a design in terms of compose things out of tons of small purpose classes. But there wasn't a lot out there that really gave a lot of guidance on the best way to work in general, right?
Right.
And that was always like my biggest paralyzing point with some of these other tools was like, okay, well, I want to customize this. Well, how do I customize it? I search on the website. Well, how do I customize this? And there's no documentation about customization at all. You know, instead, you have to just kind of poke around through GitHub issues and see like what other people are doing and sort of figure it out, which is fine, right? And some people like having things set up that way where, you know, they don't really want to be handheld at all. They just want to have the tool and they want to figure out the way that they think is the best way to work with it or whatever. And I'm not like that. So I assume that there's just got to be other people out there who aren't like that either. Like,
right.
I just don't want to make decisions. I don't want to be shown, well, here's four ways you can customize it. You just choose which one makes most sense to you. I want to be shown like, this is the recommended way to do this.
Right.
And then I can just stop worrying that I've chosen a suboptimal approach and know that I'm doing what's recommended and use my mental energy to focus on the stuff that I'm actually responsible
and
for.
And that's critical. You know? When we all only have so much mental energy, right?
Yeah.
And having the reason we use tools is it allows us to save our mental energy for the part that we really need to focus on. But there's kind of a separation between the tool and how to use the tool, right? Like if I handed you a bandsaw, like here's this bandsaw, I'm going to plug it in and I want you to, you know, you're like, oh, cool, I got this awesome bandsaw. But if I don't know that I shouldn't be cutting against the grain, you know, I could make a mess of it. So you can have the coolest tool in the world, but the skill and the workflow that you need while using that tool is equally and sometimes even more important than the tool itself.
Well, in the bandsaw analogy, I mean, it's...
You cut your hand off.
It's irresponsible, right? You can't just, I made this sweet device, figure out the best way to use it.
Right.
I'll give you one tip, keep your fingers away from it.
Yeah.
No, but that's not particularly...
And helpful. It's you've got this bandsaw, and it's got 20 unlabeled buttons on the outside of it.
Right.
And you've got this spinning disc of death, and you're like, oh, I wonder what happens if I push that button.
All buttons are red. Yeah. They all look like eject buttons. Yeah.
But how many times have we seen people do kind of the equivalent of, you know, cutting their arm off with a bandsaw when they're using a new technology, and it's because they don't know how to use it.
Right. Well, you know, and Adam touched on in terms of how people like to work. You know, I for one respect diligent documentation. It's just, we're all kind of, well, not maybe not you guys. I mean, I don't work for Hipage Industries. Is just my own thing. It's just me out there. So there's a lot of us that are just sitting behind keyboards all alone with the vastness of the internet in front of us. And all, I mean, obviously the tools now that are available are just insane. So I feel like if you have any hopes of getting people to adopt your tool, documentation is just, I mean, good documentation is just a complete necessity.
Right.
Otherwise, you just made something for yourself, which is fine. I mean, you make something for yourself and maybe a couple of your friends use it and stuff. But any hopes of wide adoption has to come with really stellar documentation.
For sure.
Yeah, and Adam, maybe you have encountered this, but I do a blog where I write about a bunch of tech-related issues. And I find that when I am writing something from the point of view that I'm trying to explain it to something else, I end up learning it and doing a better job learning it or developing it than if I was just doing it on my own. Because I have to think about all of the cases that other people might encounter and all of the things that they might think of. Have you kind of run into that with Tailwind in creating it?
I don't know necessarily specifically with Tailwind, but I agree with just in general that when you have to teach something, you learn it at a different level than you would if you just had to learn it to use it yourself.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure that carried over with the documentation and stuff in terms of just really nailing down the workflows and thinking through the different problems that people were going to run into,
right,
and how we can help them avoid them. But yeah, I definitely agree.
It sure feels like it to me. You know, it feels like this was a framework and documentation written for people to use, you know, and not just your own personal little thing.
I do have just one quick question in terms of actual like day-to-day usability of this. Just again, this is my first experience with it. I see lots of classes with things like P2 and so when you're working on these things, are you the one that's defining the prefixes? Does Tailwind define prefixes for you? And in either scenario, when you're working with it, how do you keep all of that in your mind? Or are you constantly going through and looking for references? Is it just something that you get used to after a while, you know, of using it? Or I'm just curious about how to keep all the utility classes in mind. Yeah,
I'll answer it, and then I'll let Adam answer it, right?
Okay, sure. Yeah. Well, I'm interested, to hear, because everybody works differently. So
my perspective is as someone using it, and his is as someone who has created it. So
sure, right.
His answer will be much more correct than mine. But the way that I work with it, and first of all, yes, Tailwind generates all of these base utility classes for you. So you have, like, for padding, for instance, there's P-1 is the smallest padding size.
Okay.
And if you want just padding along the x-axis, you do PX-1.
Oh.
If you want padding everywhere, you just do P-1. If you want padding only on the top, you do PT-1, padding top one. So it's kind of like a stenographer's shorthand for it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the way that you learn it is by looking at the documentation. I mean, that's how I learned it. Sure. And I also have, I use PHP Storm. It auto-completes all this stuff for me, so it's pretty easy to look it up. But it uses like a stenographer-style, I can never pronounce this word, mnemonic. Help me out.
Mnemonic.
Thank you. Thank you. I still can't pronounce it, even though you just said it.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of a shorthand where you are typing a lot less. Because once you learn it, but yes, there is that hurdle of learning it, but all of the class names kind of make sense, and you look them up as you learn them. Yeah. All right, Adam, answer it correctly.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So the prefixes are all kind of like baked in, right? You can't really customize that stuff. But for anything that kind of has multiple variations or multiple sizes, like padding or font families or colors, you sort of define the right-hand side of each class. So with padding, we have a default scale, which I think goes from 1 to 8.
It does.
And they are all proportional, right? So like P8 is 8 times bigger than P1, and P4 is half the size of P8.
Right.
And our default scale, I think the lowest value is 1/4 rem, and they just kind of increase from there. But you can change even what the key is for those, right? So if you want to use a numeric padding scale like we have, which is 1 through 8, you just roll with the default. If you want to change the values, maybe you're working on a site where it makes more sense for things to be defined in pixels instead of RAM. You can just change the scale to be whatever you want.
Ah.
But you can also change what the actual key is, right? So if you want it to have PSM, PMD, PLG, PXL, you could change it to that too, right, if you wanted to.
Oh, okay, I see.
And so you sort of have complete control there. But in terms of how I actually work with those, I think you sort of learn them just by working with it and by going through the documentation. But that said, most of the time I'm just doing rapid experimentation, like in the browser with my HTML file open, right? So I'll say, okay, well, this needs some padding. I'll try P4 to start. And I just look, it could be more. Just change that to P6. I never really go and like look at a design and measure what the values are and then translate that to the appropriate tailwind value and then apply it the first time. It's all like get in the ballpark with like a guess and right, then sort of trial and error until you fine tune it to what you want usually. At least that's the workflow that I use. And because of that, that's influenced sort of like the default scales and stuff to make sure that it was fairly easy to guess what other values existed in the range that you're in. Which is still hard in some cases, right? Like with our height and width helpers, there's like a W8, and then I think it goes to W10, then W12, but maybe W10 doesn't exist. I don't know. So sometimes you run into situations where you...
There is a W10.
You want to go... Yeah. So if you're on W12, it's not immediately obvious that W10 is the next smallest one and right, there's no W11, right?
Right.
But the reason we do that is to keep them proportional so that you know like that 10 is going to be twice as big as 5. That ended up being more useful in those cases. But for other things where there weren't so many values, like for example, text size, instead of using a numeric scale, we used like a named scale. So there's like S for extra small, SM, and base, which is like your root font size, and then LG, XL, 2XL, 3XL. And those ones are nice because you always know what's on either side of the current value that you're on, right?
Right.
So if you're using this workflow where it's like, okay, I'm going to try text 2XL. Oh, that's not big enough. I know text 3XL is the next one, or I know text XL is the one underneath it. So that's kind of my general workflow. I'm always just like throwing, you know, an arrow at the board and seeing where it hits, and then just kind of fine tuning on either side of it until I get to what I want. So I'm never really referencing the documentation, of course, which is not really a fair comparison to most people since I picked the name.
Right,
so
exactly.
It should be intuitive to me.
Yeah, of course you remember the name of your own child.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, in general, we try to make things like pretty guessable and try to sort of optimize for that, just sort of finicking around in the browser workflow.
It's fairly intuitive once you explain it that way. Like you said, the throwing the dart at the board. I mean, that's the same. Even when I'm writing a component or something, I'm looking at something in a PSD, unless I'm actually, you know, taking the rulers out and stuff. I'm just kind of like, let me just eyeball this, and then oh my god, yeah. But there's definitely designers that I've worked with that are like, this is off by a couple pixels, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, I guess you're not looking at it in Safari, are you? Maybe don't do that.
I mean, that's the important point, is that Tailwind provides some really smart defaults for you. And if for some reason those defaults you don't like, and the other nice thing about the short class names is you can type them quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Like as a programmer, every time you save one character, you think that you've just like, you've done the most awesome thing in the world, right? But you can customize these things. So as an example, Tailwind provides some really great default text sizes, right? But for the site that I was working on, I needed a smaller text size. So I created, his type scale. I think it has like, it's got XL, 2XL, 3XL. So I added a 2XS. Right, because I needed a smaller size.
Sure.
And then Tailwind just rebuilt everything, and I can just use it.
Yeah, that's
and away
awesome.
You go, and you get this. You know, it's really, really nice the way that it ends up working. Well, Adam, I know that you've got a function that you need to get to. I think this has been a fantastic talk, and thank you for putting up with all of our tech fail at the beginning.
No problem.
But is there any kind of parting words you want to say about Tailwind? I mean, what I can say about it is that I went from hating the entire idea and wanting to burn it to the ground to absolutely loving it. And I just think it's fantastic. And if you can do if you can turn someone's mindset around like that in a short amount of time, I think you're doing something right. You know,
cool.
You have to be.
Really appreciate it. Yeah. I mean, I would say if you're interested in checking out the framework, if this conversation has been kind of got your interest piqued, you can just head over to tailwindcss.com to check out the documentation and kind of get it installed and play around with it. If you're still like not totally convinced, I wrote a blog post a couple months ago called CSS Utility Classes and Separation of Concerns, which
right.
is really an epic long post that sort of documents my entire journey as someone who was very pro semantic CSS years ago, and sort of step by step how I got to where I am now and why I think the way that Tailwind encourages you to work works really well.
I read that as show prep, and it's a great article, and we will link it in the show notes as well.
Cool. Yeah. So definitely check that out if you're not entirely convinced, or if you want to, or if you think that, you know, there's something I'm missing or something. I promise you that I've lived at every, you know, position on this scale between like fully semantic to crazy utility land. So
right.
Just check that out. If
yeah, you're that's interested. That's an important point. You didn't start here, right? You evolved and ended up here because the other solutions out there weren't working for you.
Yeah. I can even link you to blog posts I've written that show you how to avoid adding classes to your HTML, you know, and how to be as semantic as possible. So
that's great.
So I've been on both sides of it, and I'm happy where I am now. Right. On top of that, like if you're already using Tailwind or want help with it, there's a GitHub repo called tailwindcss.com/discuss, which we're using as a sort of like makeshift forum, which is kind of nice because GitHub just has really good support for code formatting and linking to different
right.
commits and projects and stuff, which is cool.
What about a Tailwind Slack? Do we have one of those yet?
We do have a Tailwind Slack too.
What do I have to do to get an invite there?
All you got to do is go to the Tailwind GitHub repo. And we have like a section there called community where there's a link to the forum and also a link to join the Slack.
Nice. Well, I think that is a perfect ending. That wraps it up for another episode of the devmode.fm podcast. To have every episode delivered to your favorite podcast player, subscribe to our RSS feed or via iTunes or Google Play. And please, if you like what we're doing, leave us a review. You can also follow us on Twitter at devmode.fm. And we would love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Just leave us a comment on the devmode.fm website. For the devmode.fm podcast, I'm Andrew Welch.
I'm Earl Johnston.
Marion Nulevent.
Adam Wavin.
All right, folks. Bye-bye.
See ya.